toward the nearest deck and let Nash Larrabee and Opal Bodine pull me out of the water. George picked June up and physically moved her out of his way and then barreled in my direction. The deck swayed as the ex-pro football player charged. Gibson slid between me and George's helmet-sized fists at the last moment.
"No one treats my sister badly," George insisted.
"Yeah, and no one pounds my brother into oblivion," Gibson said quietly.
Shelby quit screaming and started laughing. I sloshed over to her and threw an arm around her shoulder.
"Think that about does it?"
Sheriff Tucker asked, his mustache twitching.
"I'm happy," I said.
"Shelby, how do you feel?"
"I feel real good, Sheriff." "What in the good goddamn is happening?"
Scarlett asked from the prison of Devlin's arms.
"It appears we've been had," Bowie said.
Cassidy let go of Shelby's legs.
"You two planned this?"
Shelby nodded, still grinning. I gave her a soggy, one-armed hug.
"Of all the low-down, sneaky, underhanded..."
Scarlett escaped Devlin's grip and advanced on us. Devlin made a slashing motion across his throat, clearly not wanting any credit for being in the know.
"Brilliant schemes! You really are one of us!"
Scarlett gave me a tight hug, not caring that I was wetter than the lake.
"I'm so proud right now,"
she sniffled in my ear.
"I learned from the master," I said, tweaking her nose. "Sneaky son of a bitch," Gibson said, no longer busy holding back George. "I can't believe this place rubbed off on you so fast," George was saying to Shelby as the sheriff unlocked the handcuffs.
"I can't believe you were in on this,"
Cassidy said, shaking her head at her father.
"Can't let you kids have all the fun."
"Say what you will, Gibbs, but you put yourself between Jonah and one pissed-off football player,"
Jameson pointed out.
"You love him,"
Scarlett crooned. Gibson looked as though he was going to toss Scarlett in the water, and then he did just that. Her shriek was cut off as the water closed over her head.
"Damn it,"
Devlin sighed. He gave Gibbs a shove from behind and sent him into the lake after Scarlett. Shelby let out a snort laugh that set everyone else off. Gibson and Scarlett surfaced, spitting water and splashing each other.
"Can we all just agree to stop messing with each other and enjoy the rest of the day?"
I suggested.
"I'll drink to that,"
Shelby said cheerfully, pulling a Mountain Dew out of her backpack. We soaked up the sun and swam and ate. Late morning gave way to lazy afternoon, folks coming and going, because I said things like folks now. I kicked back in a lawn chair, my feet up on the railing of Sonny Folsom's deck. Shelby plopped a chair down next to me.
"You did good,"
she said, grinning up at me.
"I felt good."
"Thanks for talking me down before," I told her.
"My pleasure."
She reached into her backpack and pulled out a bottle of sunscreen.
"Here, you're looking a little pink."
"What else do you have in there?" I asked, squirting the SPF 50 into my palm.
"Well, picky eaters can't go to a floating deck party and expect to have their special dietary needs met,"
she said, warming to the topic. "Of course not."
"I've got 2 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on white bread, 2 bags of sour cream and onion potato chips, another Mountain Dew."
She dug deeper, rummaging.
"Oh, and some bug spray, spare sunglasses, and another shirt in case this one gets wet or stained."
"You're a party professional," I observed.
"I also have this,"
she said, looking furtively over her shoulder. Rather than pulling it out, she tilted the backpack in my direction to show me a very nice bottle of gin, tonic water, and a bag of sliced limes. "Have bar, will travel." I approved.
There are no better moonshine makers in the country, but I still prefer some Bombay Sapphire once in a while. Besides, I like to enjoy a beverage with my show, she said, nodding to the next deck.
Misty Lynn, who'd just got done adjusting her pink leopard print bikini top over her very fake, slightly lopsided breasts in Gibson's face, was now sobbing as Rhett Ginsler accused her of trying to get in Gibbs's pants yet again.
We might need Sheriff Tucker's services after all, I told Shelby. She snickered.
You seem like a refined urbanite, at least more so than our pal Misty Lynn over there. Can I make you a gin and tonic?
I'd be honored. She dug deep, producing two solo cups.
I've only ever seen you drink beer, she said, helping herself to ice out of the nearest cooler.
I noticed a long, jagged scar on her thigh and wondered what had caused it.
You've seen me hungover on moonshine, I reminded her. I held the cups while she poured the gin.
The Black Friday boot camp, she laughed, remembering. Half the town turned out to see how hungover you'd be. They really do love you here.
Scarlett's voice carried from where she perched on the rocks with Cassidy.
What do you mean you don't get it?
Scarlett demanded. She'd mostly dried off, but my sister hadn't dried out.
I mean, how would letting Jonah believe that Shelby was still an evil reporter get him to start crushing on her?
Cassidy frowned, dipping her toes in the water. Unlike her best friend, Cassidy wasn't one to overindulge often. Though I'd been entertained by drunk Deputy Tucker recently.
Pfft, Scarlett snorted, obviously having no idea how far her voice carried.
Don't you know anything about matchmaking?
You know my dating app history. Of course I know nothing about matchmaking.
Well, the proximity of them living together with strong feelings toward each other created sparks. I created an obstacle, Shelby being a low-down, no-good, dirty reporter, that I could remove at the opportune moment to best ensure sexy times. Sparks plus no obstacles means those two will be knocking boots in no time.
I met Shelby's gaze over the cups as she opened the bottle of tonic.
Your sister is one in a million, she whispered to me.
That's a nice way of saying she's a manipulative little schemer, I said fondly.
Maybe you should keep it down. They keep looking over here,
Cassidy said. Shelby snickered next to me.
Just smile and wave,
Scarlett said at full volume.
They have no idea what we're saying.
They waved and smiled, and we did the same in return.
They're all invested in you, Shelby said. I get the sense that the whole town feels responsible for making up for your father.
They seem to be fans of you, too, I observed. Shelby gave a sassy little shrug.
Yeah, I'm kind of hard to resist.
I was starting to see that.
I guess we can be friends now, I said.
She put the top back on the tonic and took one of the cups from me.
To friendship.
I clinked my cup against hers. To friendship. 14. Jonah. Bootleg Springs had trouble ending a party. We'd stayed out on the lake until the sun kissed the water in a blaze of pinks and reds. And just before all the decks motored home, Scarlett and Devlin announced a bonfire at their new place. Bootleg apparently also didn't mind a party at a hole in the ground. Shelby rode with me, and we gave Bowie and Cassidy a lift. Something else neighbors and family did for each other when everyone lived 5 minutes from everyone else. My car bounced down the dirt path that cut through the land leading us toward the lakefront. I felt a burst of pride for my sister. Scarlett hadn't had the advantage of college, and she hadn't needed it. She'd taken over our father's handyman business before she should have had to. By the time she graduated high school, she'd saved the flagging business and started saving for her first real estate rental. Now she was building a home and planning a future with the man she loved. It was probably time for me to start weighing my options, thinking about my future. It had been a year since Renee, a year since I'd arrived in Bootleg as a stranger. I was healing here, but that didn't mean I had to stay. And even though when I'd said I was leaving, it had been a lie, the words still struck a chord within me. A decision needed to be made, stay or go. Here I had brothers and a sister. I had friends. Would those relationships survive if I left? Were they real if they didn't? I spared Shelby a glance. She was in the passenger seat, quiet. Her eyes looked heavy, shadowed. My headlights caught the ghostly skeleton of construction.
"Look at this," I said.
Bowie and Cassidy reluctantly unlocked their lips in the back seat. Under the light of the moon, we could see the beginning of a real house. The basement was poured, and the first floor was already partially framed. The bonfire was just getting started down on the shoreline. A dozen pickups and SUVs were already there. People were carting food and chairs, and even a keg down to the fire. Music played through someone's portable speakers. When we parked, Shelby peeled off to talk to Hester Jenkins and Penny Waverly, while Scarlett and Devlin gave the rest of us the grand tour.
"This here's where we're going to snuggle by the fire in the winter," Scarlett said, pointing at the plywood.
She grinned up at Devlin, who leaned in to wrap her up. Their future shined so bright, and again I felt that sharp reminder that I was missing out on something. That I could have had something like this, but it was taken away from me. They'd positioned the house to take advantage of the lake views. What would be tall windows looked out in all directions, framing in trees and water and rolling hills. I could imagine them here. Could imagine Kitten Jedediah skidding on the hardwood of the first floor in his reign of terror. I could see Christmas mornings here and birthday dinners. Would I be here to see them? Would Renee have liked it here, with her brunches and her cycling classes, her art gallery visits? Would she have been happy here with me, with my family? My throat felt tight. While Gibson admired the quality of the construction, Jameson and Leah May asked a dozen questions about the floor plan. Bowie and Cassidy made out in a dark corner, making up for lost time, I guessed. I took the opportunity to slip out. I was happy for Scarlett and Devlin, really happy, but I was also aware how far away I was from a future like this. The night air was cooler now and scented with the hint of wood smoke. I wandered in the direction of the flames, the chatter, tried to find the party mood again. I spotted her. Even in the dark, I could pick her out. Shelby was standing on the outskirts of the fun, observing.
"Hiding out?" I asked, stepping up next to her. She startled and slapped a hand to her chest.
"Are you professionally trained as a ninja?"
"Order of the Silent Footed," I said seriously. She nudged me with her shoulder.
"Funny guy."
She still looked tired.
"Everything okay?"
I asked. She lifted her lips in the ghost of a smile.
"Everything's just about perfect," she confessed. "I really like this place."
I crossed my arms so I wouldn't give in to the urge to pull her into my side. Apparently, I was a mess of feelings today.
"It's one of a kind," I commented.
"I think I like it so much I'm avoiding my dissertation. I have all the research I could possibly need. The survey answers are pouring in. The outline and hypothesis are set in stone. But every time I sit down to write it, I get wrapped up in the fun of collecting the information."
"What are you going to do when you're done with it?" I asked.
"I'm not really sure. I'm hoping to get a research job with a university or some academic organization."
"Will you go back to Pittsburgh?" I pressed.
I hope so, but I'm open to someplace new if the job fits. I don't want to make any plans until I know where the job is, what the work is. What about you? Are you sticking around here?
I was just thinking about it. I haven't decided. I have family here, but I don't know if that makes it home.
What makes a place a home?
She asked. Are you analyzing me right now? I teased.
Aren't you adorable? I analyze everyone.
I nudged her, and we started for a pair of chairs on the edge of the action. Well, don't keep me in suspense, Doc.
Don't even jinx me like that, Jonah. That doctorate is within reach, but I sure as heck don't have it yet.
Stop stalling. Tell me everything that's wrong with me. She snort laughed, and it chased the shadows out of my chest.
First of all, there's nothing wrong with you. You're remarkably normal.
Considering, I prodded.
Considering that you grew up without a father,
she said. That was probably high praise from someone with a background in psychology.
Judging by how you interact with women,
she continued,
I would guess that your mother was strong, independent, but also loving. She taught you respect and didn't let you feel like you were missing out on too much. How am I doing so far?
I nodded slowly. So far, pretty spot on. She smiled smugly.
I thought so. Now, let's dig below the surface.
She was warming to the topic.
You show up here a week after the funeral of Jonah Bodine Sr., which suggests you were peripherally aware of him, which in itself suggests you weren't interested in developing a relationship with him. However, you were very much interested in meeting your half-siblings.
I spent most of my life hating Jonah Bodine, I admitted. In my mind, he ruined my mom's life. She was working toward a degree. She could have had a career, met a nice psychologist, or lawyer, or bartender, but he took that away from her.
He or you?
Shelby asked astutely.
You're annoyingly perceptive.
I do what I can,
she joked airily.
Anyway, I hated my father for a long time, but at some point I realized it had been the pregnancy and the resulting baby, me, who had derailed Mom's life. She sacrificed it all to keep me.
And when you voiced this to your mother?
Shelby asked.
How did you know?
I shook my head.
Never mind, creepy psychic woman. It gave me a few rough years in high school, thinking that I was the problem. I had some anger issues, acted out, acted like a teenage asshole, but she never gave up on me.
Of course not. Probably because, and I'm just guessing here, she felt that her decisions had lessened your life in some way.
She mused.
This is creepy. Is this what you do all day?
Shelby laughed, and I liked the sound of it.
The reasons why people do things are fascinating. So tell me about your mom and your rocky teenage years.
I was proud of how the two of us had come out of it, the choices we'd made. She saw right through me, kept pushing until I blurted it out that she'd have been better off if I'd never been born.
And what did your mom say to that?
She called me a sweet, kind-hearted idiot. I smiled, remembering it. Told me she would do it all over again because I was the best, brightest thing in her life, and she wouldn't change a thing.
Now that's a good mom,
she said with satisfaction.
The best. Once we had that out in the open, she dumped me in this teen weightlifting program at a local gym. I found working out drained my anger, helped me focus, and the rest is history.
Oh, I doubt that,
she said, calling my bluff. You went from an angry teen to a man who makes a living fixing people. What I want to know is what made you come here. You had to know for a long time there was a possibility that you had half-siblings, something you easily could have discovered with the bare minimum of research.
The subject of Renee sure was coming up a lot lately, as if the universe was intent on making me work through it again. There was a girl, I said slowly.
Aha, she said triumphantly.
Oh, you're going to regret that preemptive victory, I predicted.
Spill it, my friend. Tell me about this girl.
Renee was pretty and interesting and smart. She was in commercial banking, driven, focused. She knew what she wanted and how she was going to get it. We met online, got paired up on a dating app, hit it off. She was into fitness and museums and had a whole Pinterest board dedicated to her future wedding. After a while, I could maybe start to see the possibility of me as the groom.
Sounds serious.
It was heading in that direction. We were still getting to know each other, and the more I got to know her, the more I liked her. And then she got sick.
Sick?
Shelby tensed beside me. It was a pretty aggressive cancer, and Renee didn't want to divide her focus between a new relationship and a new diagnosis, one that didn't have a positive prognosis. She told me she really liked me, and she appreciated the time we'd had together, but that she needed to put her energy into her health.
She dumped you because she had cancer?
She clarified. I nodded. Like I said, she knew exactly what she wanted and how she was going to get it. And I let her go. Shelby slumped in her chair.
Wow. And you're using the past tense, so...
The next time I saw her was at her funeral. I could still see her lying there looking perfect, but she was a stranger, and she was gone.
Oh, Jonah,
she said softly. It's fine, I said, waving away her concern. I let her push me away. She passed away, and then I saw my father's obituary, saw that I had brothers and a sister. Shelby got out of her chair and slid neatly into my lap.
What are you?
Her arms went around my neck.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
I let her hold me tighter. The tighter she held on, the looser the knot in my chest got. Yeah, me too. I sighed into her hair. She held on for a while, and I wrapped my arms around her. We sat in silence, listening to the crackle of the wood and flames, the laughter of friends, the symphony of the crickets and tree frogs. The music changed again, country still, but something slow about first-time love.
Jonah?
Yeah?
Do you want to dance?
15. Jonah. She'd left her hair down and loose tonight. The tips of it brushed my hand where it rested on her lower back. The firelight was soft on her face, flickering us into and out of shadow. Her eyes were more brown in this light, framed by the thick shock of bangs. I let her lead me toward the fire. Into the light and the warmth, into the crowd of people who had once been strangers and were now friends, clients, neighbors.
Do you miss her?
Shelby asked.
Your mom, I mean.
She slipped her arms around my neck. Grateful that we were done talking about Renee, I nodded.
Yeah, we're close. I need to think about flying home, spending some time with her. What about you, your parents?
I miss them,
she confessed.
They're kind of the best people.
You were adopted, right? I asked. She nodded and grinned.
Mom says they took one look at me and knew I was theirs. Sometimes adults who were adopted as children can feel a kind of crushing sense of abandonment or a driving need to find their biological parents, either for closure or to discover something about themselves. And am I talking your face off?
I grinned. I kind of like it. You don't, do you? Feel abandoned, I mean. She shook her head.
I was chosen because I was the missing puzzle piece, and I was loved just for existing. That's a pretty great start to life.
Did you ever look for your biological parents? I asked. I had, even though I'd already known that Jonah Bodine was the kind of man to cheat on his wife and abandon a child.
I did. I met my biological mother when I was 17 and going through a, yeah, but who am I really phase. I exchanged emails with my biological father, too. But there was no connection. There was no history between us. Nothing like what I share with my parents and GT. That history means a lot.
I don't have a history with the Bodines, I said, slowing our sway down to match the beat of the song.
You're building one. You've been here, what, a year? How many memories do you now have tied up in your brothers and sister? You've been here with them, facing the problems they're facing. You helped them scare off the press. You gave the whole town something else to gossip about besides your father and his connection to a missing teenager.
Jonah Bodine's bastard son, I said, but the bitterness wasn't as flavorful in my mouth anymore. Shelby grinned.
There's nothing more fun than an illegitimate child no one knew about showing up in town after a funeral, not in Bootleg Springs.
We laughed together. The shame of my background, my father, it had somehow lessened in the time I'd been here. Everyone here knew my secret, rejected by my father, and everyone accepted it, didn't blame me for it. There was a balm in that.
So you fixed me. Who's left?
I asked, twirling her around and pulling her back into my arms. I liked this, I decided. Shelby Thompson in my arms was a new favorite thing for me, and I hadn't the slightest idea what to do about it. I was so rusty at romantic feelings that I wondered if there were any salvageable moves left in me. She glanced around the fire.
Well, there's always Misty Lynn.
The woman in question was currently wrapped around Rhett Gensler like a poison ivy vine. Apparently, they'd made up.
But you know, some people just shouldn't be unraveled, she amended.
What about you? I asked. I slid my hand down her back, pressing her just a little closer. Her fingers toyed with the hair at the back of my neck. I wondered if she knew she was doing it.
Me? Oh, I'm easy,
she said cheerfully. Her eyes widened.
Oh, gosh. I mean, not that way. Not that I'm a prude. I like sex. Sex is great. I think I'm going to stop talking immediately.
She was talking fast, words tumbling out of her mouth in a torrent. She dropped her forehead to my chest, and I let out a quiet laugh.
You're quite a girl, Shelby Thompson. Oh, no. Don't start with the first and last name thing. Did you notice how everyone is all Scarlet Bodine or Nash Larrabee? The only way you get out of it is if you already have two first names.
Gotta be a country thing.
There are so many country things.
She glanced around us, making sure no one was listening.
Sometimes I feel like I'm observing an entirely new culture.
Maybe you shouldn't spend so much time observing, I said. She leaned back, looked up.
Huh?
You spend an awful lot of time watching.
It's called research, smarty pants,
Shelby argued.
Research all you want, just don't forget to participate. Ahem, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that I'm currently dancing with a very attractive man next to a bonfire under more stars than I've ever seen in my life. It feels quite participatory.
Very attractive, huh? I teased.
I had a feeling that part would stick.
Tell me something about you, Shelby. Tell me and the stars something you've never told anyone.
She hesitated, and for a minute I thought she'd make another joke. I work hard to be good enough.
Good enough for what?
Good enough so my parents never regret adopting me. Good enough so my biological parents might be sad that they missed out on me. Good enough that George is proud of me, even though I'm not a well-compensated professional athlete. Good enough to finish a triathlon.
Surprised, I nearly stopped the slow swaying of our bodies. You know you're good enough, don't you? She grinned.
Most days. Other days, I feel like I'm never going to finish my paper, or I'll never be able to run a faster mile.
If anyone can accomplish those things, it's you, Shelby. She went wooden in my arms.
Jonah Bodine, are you seducing me?
I don't really know. It's been a long time for me, and I'm not sure I'm ready to jump in with both feet. Also, you called me by both names.
Gosh dang it, it's contagious. You know I had to glue my lips together yesterday when I saw Granny Louisa and Estelle at the pop-in. I wanted to ask them, how's y'all's day? Is y'all's even a word?
She shook her head and started swaying offbeat again.
Forget all that. You caught me off guard, and so I verbally exploded on you. Are you trying to seduce me?
I'm saying nice things. That doesn't have to mean seduction, I hedged. I liked the way she felt in my arms, liked the heat of our bodies as they pressed together. I could tuck her under my arm or rest my chin on her head.
You're looking at me like you're thinking more than just nice things,
she breathed. Maybe I am.
Maybe it's the gin.
Maybe it's the girl.
Can someone cut the music?
It was Bowie yelling as he dragged Cassidy toward the fire.
I got something to say.
Shelby and I paused mid-sway.
What are you doing?
Cassidy demanded.
What's going on?
Shelby whispered. It looks like real soon is happening now.
What?
Shh, just watch. The crowd converged on the fire, ringing the couple. Whispers and expectations rose up like the smoke that curled into the night sky. Sheriff Tucker, a smile under his mustache, wrapped his arms around his wife.
Hit it, Gibbs,
Bowie said, pointing at his brother perched on a stool with his trusty guitar. Gibson started to play a soft, nimble melody. Devlin tightened his grip on Scarlett.
It's happening. It's really happening,
she squeaked, her eyes glistening with tears in the firelight. That happiness, that absolute joy for another human being, was one of the things I loved most about my sister.
Cassidy Tucker, Bowie began, taking her hand. I've been waiting a long, long time to ask you something important.
Her free hand flew to her mouth in a very un-Cassidy-like move. Deputy Tucker was almost always dignified, never surprised, and rarely speechless.
Now, timing's never been one of my strengths, Bowie grinned. But I'd like to make up for all that right now.
He held out a hand, and Sheriff Tucker stepped forward, dropping a small black box into it.
Thank you, sir.
The sheriff gave him a hearty slap on the shoulder and returned to Nadine. Tears tracked their way down Cassidy's pretty face. I felt goosebumps rise on Shelby's arms and laughed softly. Women and other women's proposals, it was a natural phenomenon.
Is this really happening?
Cassidy whispered to Bowie. Devlin clapped a hand over Scarlett's mouth before she could give a good hell yes. Jameson and Leah May edged over to us. I gave my brother a nod. He grinned back at me, and in that smile, I could see the anticipation for his own moment with Leah May. Bowie lowered to the ground on one knee.
Now, as I was saying, I've been waiting to do this for a long time, Cass. I thought about all the right things to say, all the ways to tell you that you're so much a part of me, I feel like I carry your heart in my chest.
The women in the crowd sighed collectively, Shelby included. But I realized that it doesn't matter what words I use or how I ask the question. It just matters what your answer is, and that we're not going to waste another second of our lives. Cassidy was nodding and nodding. It all went real wrong for us at a bonfire about 100 years ago, he continued. And now I'm going to make that as right as I can. Be my wife, Cassidy Ann. Be my partner, my lover, the mother of my kids. Be the keeper of my heart and the bright spot of my every day for the rest of my life.
Yes, Bowie Bodine, yes,
she croaked, dragging him to his feet as the crowd cheered.
Cass, honey, I didn't even get the box open.
I don't care. I don't care if it's a damn bat in the box. We're getting married.
He picked her up and twirled her in the firelight, in the circle of the people who'd loved them best their whole lives. Shelby sniffled in front of me, and damn if my throat didn't feel just a little tight.
This is the most romantic thing I've ever seen.
Leah May sighed as a tear slipped down her face. Bowie and Cassidy sealed the deal with a kiss that garnered hoots and hollers of appreciation. Cassidy hugged her parents while the Bodines converged on Bowie, and the love fest was on. Question: do you ever feel lonely? Jimmy Bob Prosser. Unfortunately, I am one to succumb to the draw of loneliness. I get to interact with family, friends, and neighbors all day long in the store, but along comes closing time, and I know there's no one waiting for me upstairs. I hope someday there will be someone again. I miss having someone. I don't need much, just a hand to hold while the TV's on, or someone to pick up flowers for, someone to fix a leaky faucet for. I'm hopeful. A little lonely, but mostly hopeful.
16. Shelby. The stars were bright, the flames were high, and I was dancing with Jonah Bodine. And dang it, now I was doing the first name, last name thing. But the moment called for it. It felt momentous and ordinary, intimate and somehow distant. The music was low and slow. People surrounded us all in their own little worlds. I hurt everywhere. I'd overdone everything today. The food and the sun. The fun. I was exhausted and knew I'd pushed too hard. But I wasn't going to let it make me miss out on Jonah. He was looking at me, focusing in like there wasn't another thing in the world that deserved his attention. I wanted him to kiss me. But that was old-fashioned, wasn't it? Waiting for the hero to bestow a kiss. Couldn't I be my own hero? I wet my lips and noticed Jonah noticing. You're a great guy. The words escaped before the thought was fully formed. We stopped swaying.
Is this a brush-off?
He asked. Oh, God, no. It was just a thought that popped up. Considering we've spent the last week or so in a rather contentious situation, I'm noticing now that you're pretty great and was just trying to work up the courage to kiss you. Not tell you that you have a nice personality, which you do. I'm not saying you don't.
Shut up, Shelby.
Shelby?
Huh?
Maybe just don't talk for a minute, he suggested.
Yeah, okay, I can do that. No problem.
He pressed a finger to my lips, sealing them. Everything that hurt stopped hurting. My body stopped telling me how exhausted it was and started reporting in how Jonah's finger on my mouth was the most important thing in my world. I'd kissed and been kissed before, but I'd never hung as much expectation on a first kiss as I was piling on this one. Was it because he was so blatantly male, so physically appealing? Was it because his green eyes had flecks of gold in them? or that there was a picture of him grinning, surrounded by weightlifting senior ladies circulating on social media. Or maybe it was that he cared enough about his family to be hurt when he thought they were rejecting him. The balance of strength and vulnerability in Jonah was extremely attractive to me. And so was everything else about the tall, leanly muscled man before me. Or maybe it was just the romance of witnessing the happiest day of another woman's life that was confusing things for me. He removed his finger from my mouth and slid his hands along my jawline and into my hair, tilting my head up, up, up. Our eyes locked, breath mingled. I was no longer sure that the heat on my skin was from the bonfire alone. Using his thumbs, Jonah nudged my chin up, and I watched him lower to me. Whisper soft, his lips brushed mine, once, twice, before landing lightly. I sighed into him, melting, and the kiss changed. He was still gentle, still slow, but now he was tasting me, thoroughly savoring every breath, every sigh, every second. I wanted to watch him kiss me, wanted to keep my eyes on his face so I could see how he looked as he breathed me in, lapped me up. But my lids were heavy, and the sensation of his mouth on mine, his tongue against mine, was too decadent to be dissected and analyzed. A first. The kiss stretched on and on. My hands fisted in his shirt at his waist, my body pitching forward into him. And still he kissed me. This wasn't an appetizer, a teaser to sex. This kiss was the main course, a living, breathing chemical reaction. After an eternity that was entirely too short, he eased back ever so slightly.
I wondered how you'd taste, he said quietly.
His lips were millimeters from mine. Our breath, heavy and hot, mingled in the tight space between us. He threaded his fingers through my hair, combing it back and sending a delectable shiver up my spine. That was a movie-worthy kiss, I breathed. That was really good. Really good. We were swaying again somehow, dancing and kissing under the stars in West Virginia. Who was I? Jonah toyed with the ends of my hair as I clung to his shirt. The kiss was still a palpable thing between us. It was movie perfect.
I'm probably going to want to do it again, he said, the corners of his mouth turning up.
I nodded, still breathless. I don't have a problem with that. Oh my God, if he kissed me again, I might accidentally tear my own clothes from my body and insist on sex.
Is this a mistake, seeing as how we live together?
He asked gruffly. His nose nudged the tip of mine, and then his lips were in my hair. Seems pretty convenient to me, I said breathily. Move over, Marilyn Monroe. Shelby Thompson is in the house. It's a kiss, or possibly several, or maybe even sex, which is all very biologically healthy. Humans complicate sex with expectations.
What are your expectations, Shelby?
Jonah asked me. Orgasms galore, spending long hours staring at the perfection of Jonah's body while he slept naked next to me, falling in love with him and then being devastated when the time came for me to move on to whatever job I'd land, or worse, falling in love with him and then being devastated when he decided to leave town and pursue Shelby-less dreams. I don't know. I don't know what's next for me, I confessed.
Same here. So what does that mean?
Well, with no set future, maybe we could still have a really good time in the present. Kind of like no strings, I suggested. I could balance this. My dissertation, my research, my training. I could squeeze excellent sex into my schedule. It would be easier than trying to wedge a romantic relationship into the mix.
See where it goes with no demands, no expectations?
He asked. I was hypnotized by the firelight on his face.
He could have asked me to donate both my kidneys to a black market health scam, and I would have dumbly handed him a scalpel. No demands. No expectations. A fling. I'd never had a fling before, and I liked the idea of one day reminiscing about my summer fling with the sexy, interesting, sweet personal trainer.
A fling, he repeated.
I couldn't tell if he liked the idea or was horrified by my suggestion. Think about it, I said.
I will.
A smile curved his lips.
I have a feeling I'll be thinking about it a lot.
There y'all are! I jumped, trying to extricate myself from Jonah, but his hands were caught in my hair. Ouch! I yelped as my head whipped backward. The pain returned and roared through my system. Am I interrupting? Scarlet asked smugly. I'd never had murderous thoughts before, but if my eyeballs could shoot teeny tiny daggers, Scarlet Bodine would be bleeding from a million wounds.
Need something, Scarlet?
Jonah asked, extracting his hands from my hair. I thought I'd give you your birthday present early, she said.
Now? He asked.
He glanced at me and reached for my hand. I swooned like a lovesick nerd drooling over the star quarterback.
We're kind of in the middle of something.
I mentally swooned again, harder this time.
Well, I'm real happy about what y'all are in the middle of, seeing as how this was my plan all along. This present can't wait,
Scarlet insisted. She jerked her thumb over her shoulder. Hello, Jonah.
Mom?
17. Jonah.
Happy early birthday!
My mom grinned and opened her arms. Jenny Leland was tall and lean with a short cap of blonde hair. She had a dimple in one cheek that was perpetually visible because she was always smiling. I had my father's coloring, but I had my mom's green, green eyes.
What are you doing here?
I hugged her, lifting her off the ground. She laughed just like she had when I'd hugged her like this at my high school graduation.
Surprise! Scarlet called and said it was high time I came to Bootleg Springs for a visit,
Mom said, looking fondly at my sister.
And I couldn't say no.
Not many people can, Shelby said.
Great. My mother crashed my first kiss with Shelby. Maybe Shelby could explore the possibility of operating with no expectations, but judging the sparkle in my mom's eyes, mirroring the one in Scarlet's, there were other expectations on the line.
Mom, this is Shelby, I said, making the introduction quickly.
Shelby, this is my mom, Jenny. Shelby is my... Scarlet leaned forward expectantly.
Roommate,
Shelby supplied quickly.
Scarlet was kind enough to rent me a room in Jonah's place.
Well, isn't that nice?
Mom said with a big smile. She'd definitely seen the kiss. Shit. She looked good, tall and trim with her sunny hair sweeping low over her forehead. She had faint lines next to her eyes and mouth that, in my biased opinion, made her look even softer and lovelier.
I can't believe you're here, I confessed. I missed you.
She hugged me again, tighter this time.
I missed you too. Now, who's going to introduce me to all these other Bodine boys?
Scarlet, why don't you round up your brothers and I'll get Jenny a drink,
Shelby offered.
That would be lovely, Shelby,
Mom said. Shelby and Scarlet hurried off in opposite directions.
Now I see why you didn't want to fly home for a visit,
Mom announced.
She's gorgeous and polite. I give you my blessing.
That was literally our first kiss that you barreled into, O ye of terrible timing, I warned her. Don't start putting together a wedding guest list.
You never know where you'll find love,
she said airily.
I can guarantee it won't be in Bootleg Springs. I'm not here permanently.
Neither is Shelby. If anything, we have the summer.
A summer fling, then.
Mom sighed. Even after everything, my mother was a romantic at heart.
and maybe I had inherited a bit of that too, but there was also the piece of me that wasn't sure if I was over Renee. I sighed. I promise you, eventually I'll settle down and give you as many grandbabies as you want, just not right now. She squeezed my hand.
I'm only mostly teasing you. You look happy, Jonah, and I don't want to derail that. You deserve to be happy. Jonah Bodine, is this your mother? Your mama? Mama!
Newly engaged off-duty Deputy Cassidy Tucker was three sheets to the wind and sloshing beer out of her cup down her arm. Cassidy, meet my mother, Jenny. Mom, this is Scarlett's best friend and town deputy when she's not half in the bag.
Pfft, Cassidy said.
I'm whole in the bag tonight, smarty pants, but I am so excited to make your acquaintance. Your son has just been a delight. Everyone in the whole town loves him, and no one holds the whole illegitimate son of Jonah Sr. against him at all.
My mother blinked.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
Cassidy leaned in and grabbed her for a sticky hug. Around here, everyone knows everything about everybody, I cautioned Mom.
Apparently so,
she said, looking a little dazed.
Bowie Bodine, get your fine ass over here,
Cassidy bellowed.
I'm so sorry. I rarely drink my face off, Jonah's mama. What was your name again? But you see, I don't have to work tomorrow, and my best friend in the whole wide world, Scarlett Bodine, is building this beautiful house, and we're going to get married and have babies together and be sisters just like we always planned. And I'm just so happy I could burst.
You'll get married and be sisters? Mom asked, clearly entertained. Cassidy closed one eye.
Hang on, I think I got that wrong. Don't want to be giving West Virginia a bad impression to you. On you? For you.
Cassidy and Bowie just got engaged tonight, I explained to my mom.
I've loved him my whole entire life.
Cassidy sighed, holding up the ring an inch from my mother's eyes.
And it's all really happening. All I had to do was stop being a chicken shit and admit what I really wanted.
It should have been weird, my mother introducing herself to the children of the man who'd derailed her life. My half-siblings, meeting half of the town that knew she'd had an affair with a married man. But it was remarkably civil. Friendly, even. Bootleg loved a friendly scandal. Bowie was nearly as inebriated as his fiancée and kept hugging my mom. Jameson beamed at her when my mother told him she'd looked up his art and loved his installation in Charlotte. Gibson brought her a second drink after she finished the gin and tonic Shelby made for her. And while Gibson and my mom discussed the finer points of fast-pitch softball, I pulled Shelby aside. I'm beyond sorry for the interruption. She gave me a wan smile.
It's fine. Your mom is great.
You look tired. Are you okay? Do you want me to take you home? She was pale, and those shadows under her eyes concerned me.
I'm fine. Just a long day, she said. GT and June are going to drive me home. Junie's hit her wall of peopling for the day.
You sure you're okay? I pressed. I want to talk more about before. Her smile was a slow burn.
I would also like to do more talking.
I would too, I admitted. Scarlett might be a problem, I warned her.
We can handle her,
Shelby predicted. I laughed. Have you met my sister?
I believe we handled her just fine today,
she reminded me. I remembered Scarlett's face when Sheriff Tucker slapped the cuffs on Shelby. We make a good team.
You ready, Shell?
George and June approached. June had a book under her arm and a headlamp on.
Ready,
Shelby said, looking several degrees more energetic than she had a minute ago. I wondered if the show was for me or her brother.
I'll see you back at the house.
I wanted to kiss her again, but not with her gigantic brother, my paying client, hovering. It didn't feel professional or wise. Shelby and June headed in the direction of the car.
Funny joke today, George said.
He still didn't sound like he thought it was very funny.
Thanks for not pounding my face in. As long as you're good to my sister, that won't become necessary, he said, crossing his arms in front of his chest.
Good to know. Appreciate the heads up. He slapped me on the shoulder. It stung.
Ah, now that that's settled, we can return to our previous dude-bro relationship. See you Monday?
Looking forward to it,
I told him, rubbing my shoulder. You better get back over there. Scarlett's trying to talk your mother into doing shots.
Fuck. Me. My mom has officially been inducted into bootleg society.
Shelby. How drunk is she?
Me. She's laying in the back seat singing Lady Gaga songs. I'm driving her to the inn and pouring her into her room.
Shelby. FYI, they have a hangover room service package.
18. Shelby. The pain in my back was a wildfire that existed to drive me insane. I couldn't sleep. I'd known I'd overdone it. The whole day on the water, the party, the sun, the gin, the kiss. Everything hurt. My back, shoulders, hips, wrists. The only thing that temporarily blurred the pain was remembering every second of that kiss. I'd kissed Jonah by a bonfire on a clear summer night. I'd also discussed the possibility of a no-strings-attached fling with the man. And then his mother and my pain brought everything to a screeching halt. I'd had to grit my teeth to keep from groaning when I got out of GT's car. My brother didn't know. No one knew. And no one was going to know until I had it under control. I tried to roll over, looking for a comfortable position on my mattress, and a pathetic moan escaped. My room in the little yellow house was small. The bed was wedged in between cute little bookcases that doubled as nightstands. Not that there was a need for two of them. It would be impossible to fit two adults on this mattress. I groaned again and winced. Fatigue, aches, discomfort. It was like a never-ending case of the flu, which sucked because at least when I had the flu, I knew there was an end in sight. Not with this.
Shelby?
It was followed by a light knock. Oh, crap. Jonah. Oh, my God. Was he coming in to kiss me again? Was he expecting more? Not when I was curled in a ball with all my synapses lighting up with pain. The doorknob turned. Maybe if I pretended to be asleep? I closed my eyes.
I know you're awake,
he said, amused from the door.
I've seen your sleeping face. Now, you look like you just ate a lemon.
I opened one eye. Oh, hey, Jonah, how's it going?
Playing it cool, casual. I heard you moaning. Thin walls. You okay?
I winced as turning my head delivered a new shock of pain in my neck. Must have been dreaming.
Or you must be lying,
he said, taking stock of me. I was curled in the fetal position, stiff as a board. Even I knew this didn't look natural. I'm just coming down with something. Maybe I had too much sun, I said lamely.
Can I bring you some water or ibuprofen, a hot pad?
The sweet, sexy man in my doorway thought I was getting my period. It made me laugh, and that made me suck in a sharp breath when my back spasmed. He was all the way inside the room now, reaching for me. He laid a cool hand on my forehead and one on my back. It's nothing, I said through clenched teeth.
You take meds every day on a schedule. Meds that you keep hidden in your room. You hold yourself like your back hurts all the time. And now you're curled up on your bed in the middle of the night moaning in pain, Shelby. Don't lie to me.
Look, there isn't anything anyone can do, I said, sharper than I'd intended.
don't think you can dig into this and fix it.
That's what he was, a fixer. Talk to me, he ordered.
I don't want anyone to know, I confessed, squeezing my eyes shut again.
Roommate confidentiality, he said, his hand still on me.
It was so different from the way he'd touched me earlier, still gentle, but now almost clinical. I cursed my stupid body. He'd never look at me the same now. I have a condition, I said, exhaling slowly when the spasm lessened.
Okay,
he said, waiting for more. I was just diagnosed this spring, and it's manageable and annoying, and I hate it, but I'm dealing with it, and it's my body, so I don't have to tell my whole family and have them worrying.
Shelby.
Ankylosing spondylitis, I blurted the words out.
It was the first time I'd ever said them out loud, and that was weird. It wasn't like saying it made it more real, or did it? Bless you,
Jonah joked. Har, har. It's a form of arthritis, spinal arthritis. I could end up bent in half, I joked, but the thought of it was still terrifying.
Arthritis. Inflammation, he said.
I nodded into my pillow and tried not to whimper like a big dumb baby. I hadn't had a flare since just prior to my diagnosis. I thought there was something very, very wrong. Now at least I had a name for it, and I knew it wasn't some kind of rare form of meningitis devouring my innards. Small comfort in the moment, though. With hot roommate Jonah sitting on my bed, looking at me at my sweaty, pained worst. He got up and walked out. Great, just great. Thanks a lot, stupid garbage arthritis, I muttered into my pillow.
I can still hear you, he called dryly. I'll be back in a minute.
I heard the water running in the bathroom and then his quick stride on the stairs. True to his word, he returned a minute later.
Here, take this, he said.
Grumpily, I opened my eyes. Jonah was standing before me, a glass of water in one hand, two caplets in the other. What is it? I asked.
Naproxen.
He dumped them in my hand and helped me into a seated position so I wouldn't choke and die. Thanks, I said, slugging the water back. You look mad. He did. His jaw was tight, lips pursed.
I'm not mad, he insisted.
Now which one of us is lying?
I'm not mad, he said, taking the glass of water from me. I'm annoyed that you're selfishly keeping this from everyone. What good is that doing anyone?
I'm going to tell my family. I just want to get a handle on it first. Jeez, cut me some slack. This is my first flare since the rheumatologist put a name to it.
Was this when you left town a few weeks ago?
Yeah. I knew something wasn't right, and I had to meet with my dissertation director anyway to make sure I was headed in the right direction with my research.
It's not right that you're keeping people out of this part of your life. Now get up, he said.
Why? Everything hurts, and I'm whiny. I'm not going to be less whiny someplace else, I warned him.
Up,
he said, gently tugging me to my feet. He guided me out of the room, and I limped across the hall to the bathroom. The tub was filling with hot water.
Sit,
he ordered, pushing me down on the toilet lid. I gaped at the tub. You're drawing me a bath? He pulled a carton out from under the doll-sized vanity, Epsom salts.
Yes, you shared your situation with me. I'm helping take care of you. You got a problem with that?
He dumped the salts into the tub. I shook my head.
Good. Now, do you need help getting undressed?
He asked, testing the water temperature with his hand. Nope, I squeaked, clutching my shirt to my chest. I was still wearing the clothes I'd been in all day, too tired to change. His first glimpse of my naked body was not going to be helping me into a hot bath like an invalid. If he still wanted to move forward with a physical relationship, I would be draped in suitable lingerie, shaved, lotioned, and ready for action.
Call me if you need help getting out,
he said and shut the door with a decisive click. I would most certainly not need help getting my wet, ouchy body out of the tub. "Thank you," I called weakly. Alone and embarrassed, I stripped and eased my way into the water, sliding in up to my neck. God bless Scarlet and her deep tubs. It soothed instantly, and I decided to spend the night submerged if it meant feeling degrees better. Then I remembered every celebrity bathtub death and pushed myself a little higher out of the water. I heard Jonah on the stairs again. The bathroom door opened a crack, and I made a move to cover myself. But he merely dropped shorts and a tank top through the opening, and then shut the door again. I sighed and leaned back again. My secret was out. I had a rare-ish disease that, if left unmanaged, would turn my spine into a question mark. It caused back, muscle, and joint pain, fatigue, and, on occasion, not very attractive skin reactions and eye irritation. Now the ball was in Jonah's court. Would he still want to roll around naked with me? I didn't think the odds looked good. Pouting in the tub long enough to wrinkle like a raisin, I did feel marginally better, at least physically. I made a note to make warm baths a part of my screw-you-inconvenient-disease routine. Carefully, I climbed out of the tub, dried off as best I could, and pulled on the fresh clothes. I opened the door a crack. There was no sign of Jonah. I stepped out into the hall and looked in my room. The pillows were arranged in a weird configuration. There was a fresh glass of water, two hot pads, and a portable fan.
"Get in,"
Jonah said, appearing in my doorway and gesturing toward the bed. "You don't have to tuck me in. I'm not four."
"You're acting like it,"
he reminded me, reaching out to hook a finger over my protruding lower lip. "Hey, I'm the one with the incurable disease here. Doesn't that earn me some slack?" He sighed.
"Please, get in bed."
Too tired to argue, I obliged. Then got less tired and a lot more defensive when he leaned over me. "Do not even think that you're going to give me a pity kiss," I said, slapping a hand to his chest. To my humiliation and physical relief, he moved the first heating pad so it was under my shoulders, and then tucked the second one under my low back. He arranged the extra pillows so that my knees were open to the sides, supported in a pose I recognized from yoga class. "Oh, that's kind of nice," I murmured.
"It's no pity kiss,"
he quipped, but I could tell he was still annoyed. "Remind me to talk to you tomorrow about why you're exponentially madder than you should be, Kay?" I yawned. He angled the fan toward me and pulled the blanket up, the slightest of smiles on his perfect lips.
"Good night, Shelby."
I kissed my hopes for a smoldery summer fling with my handsome roommate goodbye.
19. Jonah.
I just have to put my contacts in and find a clean sports bra, then I'll be ready to run.
Shelby promised with a yawn from the top of the stairs. She was still in the clothes I'd laid out for her last night, her hair in a messy tangle on her head, and her glasses were crooked. She looked tired, but less pained. I shook my head. "We're not running today, Shelby," I told her as I laced up my shoes.
"I knew I shouldn't have told you," she complained. "Now you're going to be all, you can't compete in a triathlon. You're too feeble and pathetic to do anything athletic."
Her baritone impression of me was mildly offensive.
"Shelby, no, I'll continue my training even if you refuse to help me. I'm doing this with or without your permission."
She actually stomped her foot. "Are you done?" I asked mildly.
"I think so," she said.
"We're not running today. We're going to breakfast." She looked at me with suspicion.
"You still want to hang out with me?"
I nodded.
"And you're still willing to train me?"
Yes, and now that I know more about your health, I can do a better job of coaching you, you stubborn, secretive pain in my ass. The insult seemed to have the opposite intended effect. She looked downright happy.
Okay, let me find a regular bra, and I'll be right down.
Maybe run a brush through this, I suggested, waving a hand over my own head.
Don't be silly. Your hair always looks great.
I couldn't tell if she was joking or not. We decided on Moonshine Diner for our breakfast and chat. I had a lot of things I wanted to say to her, but I'd wait until we had some coffee and food first. I took the menu from her when she slid into the booth across from me. Shelby was moving a little gingerly, but leaps and bounds better than last night.
How are you feeling? I asked her.
Fine. Can I have my menu?
She asked, stretching her arms across the table.
No, you can't.
Morning, Jonah. Morning, Shelby.
Clarabelle greeted us with a smile and a pot of coffee.
Interest y'all in some caffeine?
Yes, please,
Shelby said, offering up her mug.
Thanks, Clarabelle, I said as she filled mine.
Shelby, the usual?
She asked.
I'll have the pancake stack.
I cut Shelby off. We'll both have veggie omelets with cheese and a side of fruit. Clarabelle's red eyebrows climbed toward her hairline.
Is that so?
Shelby wrinkled her nose, but nodded reluctantly.
You haven't kidnapped this nice girl, and she's sending me an SOS,
Clarabelle asked me. I grinned.
Whatever Jonah here says,
Shelby said with zero enthusiasm.
Coming right up,
Clarabelle promised and disappeared with her coffee pot.
Veggie omelets, fruit,
she scoffed at me. Your diet is horrendous. I'm saying it as your trainer and your friend. With your condition,
lower your voice. 50% of the people in here are just waiting for some tasty niblet of gossip,
she hissed. Fine, I said, leaning in. Diet is one of the most important components of managing your condition, which, judging by the look of disgust on your face, is something your doctor has already explained to you.
My rheumatologist may have mentioned something about nutrition,
she grumbled. And? I pressed.
And I didn't hear what she was saying because I was too busy inhaling a bag of pork rinds on the exam table.
I wasn't sure if she was joking.
Oh, come on,
Shelby rolled her eyes.
I'm kidding. It was a six-pack of Slim Jims and a carton of chocolate milk.
I didn't want to smile, but I felt one working its way up.
There's the smile,
she said, pointing at my face.
Now, let's talk about why you're having breakfast with me and not, as they say round these parts, your mama.
We're talking about you right now, I reminded her. And you're valiantly trying to use your adorably weird sense of humor to deflect. She leaned back against the booth.
You're trying to turn this into a professional relationship, aren't you? We have a kiss that knocks my socks off, and then you find out I have a little bit of arthritis and it's all business now,
she complained. She delivered it like a joke, but I could hear the disappointment. I reached across the table and squeezed her hand. Shelby, there's nothing professional.